Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, here for the recap of Stage 11, Double Mont Ventoux Day. Everyone's been waiting for, here with Benji, as usual. The show is supported by our show partner, Lacole. We thought a break would win. It was a high-quality break that would go up the road, but we also had some good GC action on this final climb. We'll also talk route design as well at the end. 200 Ks long, got two Category 4 climbs either side of the intermediate sprint point. So is Matthews and Colbrelli going to get in the break, try and take those 20 points? They didn't for some reason. They didn't have a great day, I don't think. And then they had the Col de la Lugière, 9.5K, 6.5%, then double Ventoux. The first ascent is not as hard, 22Ks at 5%, longer, shallower gradient, false flat section in the middle. Descent. The descent is really like high speed, draft matters, weight matters, not so technical compared to some of the other ones we've seen in this tour so far. 12K, 14K valley, and then they do it again. They turn around and they go the other side, the Gap Ventoux. This is the steepest side, 15.8K is at 8.7%, maybe the one you're more familiar with than a descent to the finish in Malocène. So we had a break, Benji. We had a fight for it, like a hard fight again. How do you, this break formation might be missing some, all the names I mentioned yesterday. How do you think the parkour design for the first 80Ks like affects the composition of these breaks, in even though it's a mountain stage?
Well, initially you've got a situation where it's flat before the climbs even start, and on that section is rulers that get an opportunity to go away. Ballerini tried, for example. That's a rider that you won't see climbing the Ventoux at the best, but he is very strong on the flattest section at the start, and that's what happens there. And that's why Higuita, for example, can't attack on the flat section before the climb start. They have to kind of wait until the road goes uphill, because then they can start going for it. And it took a while for the road to go uphill. We did see a few attacks already beforehand, and I think a four-man group was kind of getting away before the first climb started. That's Dan Martin, Alaphilippe, Perez, and Pierre Rolland. In that four-man group, well, they had the advantage that UAE was sitting at the front of the bunch and the road was relatively narrow, so they just decided to take the entire road up and make sure that it's very hard for people to move up in the peloton to try and go for the attack. And that's what happened until the gap was around 50 seconds, and then attacks started to follow. We had a second group forming after that, Vegard Starkelangen. We had Bernard, Mollema, Paulit, Meurisse, Baragli, Durbridge, and Pacher. So Baragli as a teammate for Xandro Meurisse, most likely. Bernard as a teammate for Mollema, most likely. But Vegard Starkelangen is a rider from UAE. So I think what they try to do UAE there is, knowing that he's not the best climber in the team, try and set him in the breakaway, just in case something explodes on the first Ventoux. You got Starkelangen at the front, that he can still be of help when we hit mountains where he wouldn't still be there if the race opened up there. So I think it's a satellite rider to try and help them out if something goes wrong along the way. And yeah, I still think it's a good move. You would say perhaps don't send your riders in the breakaway if you are the leader in the race, but I think this one rider won't really be moving the needle. But that's the one attack. And then the climb started happening, and that's where we saw some stuff happening. We saw a move from Elissonde, Perrichon, Cosnefroy, Van Avermaet, and Van Aert from the peloton. And just at that second, I was like, this is the moment. Van Aert's going to win Ventoux stage. It has to happen. So I decided to go to my local bookmaker, and well, on the internet, and I looked at it, and the odds were 151 for Wout Van Aert.
People still don't realize he was already
bridging up. I don't get it. And I was like, yeah, easy, okay. So I decided to go in, and that group eventually came closer, but we saw action at the front as well. Alaphilippe and then Martin started going for KOM points. Quintana was part of one very early on in the stage, but was not in this break anymore. But to the point of Dan Martin and Alaphilippe, they were very attacking at the start of the stage. Like, it's a bit too much, it feels like.
Well, I think we've seen so far on this Tour de France that the people going for KOM points early, and they're going for like a point, 5 points on these earlier climbs, 10 points maybe for a Cat 1. He got double points on top of Monvol 2 the second time. That's 40 points. And, yeah, the people going for those early, they spend a lot, like we saw with Woods, Quintana, Poles early. And then the people who are riding more conservatively, Turns, O'Connor, and the other riders in the break today, Mollema and Trek and Wout van Aert, they seem, yeah, they ride conservatively and then fresher for when the action really happens for the stage win later in the stage. And this is with like 100 Ks plus to go. Alaphilippe's attacking, takes the intermediate sprint with a huge effort. I didn't really understand that because like Colbrelli and Matthews weren't there, so it wasn't really necessary to attack like that. Martin was following him, and the minute it happened, I said to you, I think, Benji, I was like, this reminds me of Alaphilippe when he was just trolling in breaks last year, when he was in the break with Col de la Loz, maybe with Carapaz and a Movistar rider, and he was like, attack, get caught, not work with them, and then just get dropped. And they're like, what are you doing? And he kept doing it and come back. And he was kind of doing a similar thing, I thought, today, and it would eventually cost him in the end. But yeah, the break, nothing too much happened on the first ascent of Vaughan 2, Benji, except Ineos started taking it up really early. Even on the flatter sections before the first climbs with Thomas, were you surprised that they weren't just pacing the climbs, Benji? They were also like trying to control the race. So the only explanation for that is stage win, right?
Yeah, on one end, yes, but we also need to remind ourselves that earlier in the stage, Geraint Thomas was already dropping on the initial parts when the break was starting to form on the first hill. So it feels like if they had to use Thomas today and Rowe, it had to be in the valley or the lesser gradients before the steeper sections of the first Vaughan 2. That's the only place they can use them. And I think that's why they decided to put them at the front, because otherwise they're useless the entire rest of the stage. And this way they can at least put some pressure on podium candidates, perhaps, that might have a harder time with two ascensions of the Vaughan 2. And then we're thinking about everybody that is around Carapaz right now. Vingegaard, Ron, O'Connor, who is still in second at that point and might still be at the end, but I haven't gotten to that yet. So a lot of action there from Ineos that a lot of people are asking, what are they doing? Why are they doing that? And there were some great stories. They're trying to set up Froome. They're trying to ride Gavin to ODL, stuff like that. It was all kind of fun to read, but I still kind of don't actually know.
I don't know. Like, it makes total sense what they did on the final climb on Vaughan 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to pace the valleys with Luke Rowe, you're not bringing back the break. It's at like 5:20. They're making no impression on it. And then have Rowe drop off. And he's still on the course. We're going to, by the time we finish recording, we'll round up the OTL news. But they put Rowe at serious threat of finishing outside the time limit.
Yeah.
For pacing back a break they were never going to bring back. And obviously everyone's just getting a free ride in the bunch, like UAE, etc. They didn't drop any domestiques on the flat with Rowe. But anyway, Ineos pacing. On the first ascent in the break, we see the break split up a little bit and we see Trek trying to play the numbers game, I thought. And so it splits. You got Pascher, Roland, Elissonde, Bernard, Mollema. So last three I said are Trek riders, Bernard and Elissonde go up the road. Elissonde initially, I think. They're bridged to by Alaphilippe, Wout van Aert, Durbridge, maybe a couple of other riders. And then Mollema's behind, and he's basically making Quentin Pascher and Roland pace him back.
Yep.
And they do so for the whole climb. And eventually Roland's on his own pacing Mollema back. And then they get to about 20 seconds. Roland cracks, Mollema attacks, and bridges across. So we now have a group on the descent of Elissonde, Durbridge, Mertesa, Wout van Aert, Alaphilippe, Mollema. Apologies if I'm missing anybody. And we thought Alaphilippe was the favorite in the markets live out of that group. And I was thinking,
nah,
like, he wasn't. No, that's a fact. He was the favorite out of that group.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But we don't believe that. No, we didn't, because I think Wout van Aert has been coming into a bit better form throughout this race, stage one and two, a bit scratchy, maybe the TT not as good as he would have hoped for. And he basically, they get onto the second ascent of Monmouth 2. Ineos has been pacing behind, and he starts pacing. And he just wants to ride this at a steady pace, and people start dropping. Durbridge drops, Mertesa eventually drops. And I think we might not have seen it yet. Oh, no, I forget, Benji. Trek tried to play the numbers again with Elissonde. Do you think that was the right thing to do, to give him a chance up the road and hope no one chased him?
I think yes, because you've got a situation here where you have the numerical advantage, and while in our eyes, Van Aert was the better climber and was likely going to destroy them, I feel like if you're Mollema and Elissonde, you have to try something to try and beat Van Aert, because Mollema is the person that can try and follow while you try and use Alessandro to put pressure on Van Aert and perhaps overextend themselves early so that Mollema can try and hang on and perhaps benefit from that later on, stuff like that. But on the other hand, you might have the opposite side. What if Alessandro does not attack and the tempo is much lower, and because of that, Mollema can hang on better? Or you think that Wout Van Aert spacing that he started doing just after that to try and catch Alessandro again would have still come at a very early moment?
Yeah, I think the way Wout wanted to ride the climb was slow. Was not slow. It was steady, okay, without any accelerations. And I think the amount of time he put into them, maybe Trek, I think the one mistake Trek made was when Wout Van Aert attacks and we see he gets a good gap. Alaphilippe full cracks. He's like swinging around the road. He nearly chops his front wheel on Mollema's back wheel. He seems to like fully crack. Mollema looks okay. Wout bridges to Alessandro so quickly, and we're like, if these two, he's probably gonna drop Alessandro in 2 minutes. He eventually does off the wheel. He just goes on the front, doesn't even pretend, because if he goes to finish with Alessandro, that unlikely scenario happens. Then he's 50-50, but probably better than 50-50 for Van Aert to beat him in the sprint. And then he drops Alessandro, and Trek don't drop Alessandro back. They kind of have Mollema and Alessandro ride. One's at 50 and one's at 110. They just ride the threshold 20 seconds in front of each other on the climb chasing Van Aert. But it didn't really make a difference. Van Aert goes clear and everyone's cooked behind. And Ineos, they started with a 5-minute lead on the second ascent of Vol 2, Benji. Ineos only managed to put 40 seconds into him, and they were pacing with everybody, with Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, forward. And like not even at the start, like the initial part, it stayed the same, 4:30.
Yeah.
And that kept up until like the moment where we started seeing a Kwiatkowski takeover and the rider ahead of him. I don't even remember who was ahead of Kwiatkowski pacing, because I was looking too much at Wout Van Aert and praising his Belgian godlikeness. And at that point, I thought it's starting to go down, and it went down very slowly. Kwiatkowski started hammering it at the front, and we saw people in that group dropping. And Ulitsenko was one of the riders that dropped. By the way, Godu dropped the first one too and was not coming back. Stuff like that. Guillaume Martin was getting into trouble, but who was hanging on? Vingegaard was hanging on. Carapaz, of course, because otherwise Kwiatkowski would not be pacing. Pogacar was still there. We still had Uran and one other rider, but I don't remember. Mas, yes, indeed.
Lutsenko was, he's kind of yo-yo. He's a little bit off the back. Kelderman, you saw slipping places, going to the back as well. And we were thinking, well, it's got to be a Carapaz attack, right? Ineos are paced all day. They've invested their whole team. They've ridden with Port full gas. O'Connor starts dropping, actually, and O'Connor drops off the pace of off the pace of Port early. They're taking him out a second on GC. They're now pacing with Kwiatkowski last, much better in the mountains today. He got his full, like, mean face on, his classic Kwiatkowski pull. And he's basically his last pull. It drops Micah. Micah went to the front for like a second, then pulled off. And I was like, that's not a great sign. Mas drops. And then, Quido pull finishes his pull, Benji. 2Ks, 1,500 meters to the top. Nothing. Carapaz doesn't attack. I was like, have Ineos done a Movistar here where they've paced the whole day, paced really hard on the climb, and their team leader's not told them that he doesn't have great legs today? Because it was kind of weird that the Carapaz, he mustn't have felt too good. And we basically got Pogacar going on the front a little bit.
Yeah.
And Uran going on the front a little bit. And we were like, what's going to happen now?
Yeah. And the factor to that is that we don't only see that. His competitors see that as well, that Carapaz can't make that attack. And if I'm in that group and if I see that Carapaz is not making a move after Kwiatkowski doing all that work, then I know he doesn't have the legs to do it. Like, from that point onwards, I know that I can attack this group if I'm a podium candidate, and I can try and gain time on Carapaz, because I think I could potentially drop him. Well, not me, but if I was somebody in that group with proper cycling apparel from Le Col, I would be able to...
we'll talk about them for the descent. Well, no, even before then, there was a little bit of a tail when Bilbao came back to the group. He'd been dropped. And then Ineos dropped the pace after Charlie Renard, and Bilbao came back to the group. And I was like, Ineos slow pacing now, bluffing because Carapaz doesn't actually feel good. In the end, Jonas Vingegaard in the white jersey hard attacks the group. No response from anybody except Tadej Pogacar, who gets on his wheel. We get a close-up image of Pogacar's face. And I was like, that is the Jebel Hafid Adam Yates, Tadej Pogacar face. Hotter conditions today. And he was just, yeah, not looking too good. And that was confirmed when he just cracked completely off the wheel of Vingegaard. And Vingegaard hadn't really attacked him again. He was just kept his pace, which was super high. This is like with 1,500 meters to go. And Pogacar's going backwards really fast. He's got Uran and Carapaz relaying behind him. And Jonas goes over the top of Mont Ventoux with a 38 to 40 second lead on Pogacar. My question to you is, Benji, does Pogacar even need to close the Jonas Vingegaard attack? Wouldn't the more conservative option, if he doesn't feel good, to just be sitting on Uran and Carapaz and say, oh, you guys are going to close it and you'll probably make it up on the descent anyway? Like, Jonas is not going to make 5 minutes up in 1,500 meters and then on a fast descent.
That's true. That's a very good point. And that's one of the factors. I think that indeed Pogacar didn't have to do it because he's far ahead. But on the other hand, I think Pogacar just is greedy when it comes to this kind of stuff. He tried to follow Vingegaard when he was on his limit. So he overextended himself as well over there. So in the descent, he probably wanted to keep it going and prove to the others then, okay, I'm still the boss here. It's not that I can't chase him down. I'll try and show you that I can chase him down, something like that. But all in all, it would have been clever indeed if he sat in the wheel and said, oh, Uran, got a pause, you can do it. But yeah, I think it's pretty much rest days in the next 2 days, if I recall correctly, when it comes to the profile. So does it really matter? Like,
It reminded me of Bernal following Yates on, was it Alpe d'Huez?
Yeah.
Stage Yates attacked him, or what stage he won. And it's like, you didn't really need to. You got Martinez there, and then for the rest of the tour, he let Martinez close the gaps for him. But yeah, Jonas goes to the top, 40-second lead. Wout van Aert's gone over the top with a big lead ahead of him. Got the Trek riders somewhere about 20 seconds ahead of Jonas Vingegaard. And Wout van Aert's clearly, the minute he crested Ventoux, stage win was like 100% guaranteed if he didn't crash on the descent. And he's heavier than all these guys. No one's catching him on this fast descent. And he's a good descender technically. And the question that literally no one is asking, Benji, except maybe Denmark: should Jumbo Visma have made Wout van Aert wait up for Jonas Vingegaard?
I asked the question on Twitter.
You said it as a joke.
The second time I didn't, because you got to keep the situation in your head here. You've got Wout van Aert riding at the front, 1 minute and 10 ahead of Mollema and Elizonde. There's 10 seconds at a certain point, 10 seconds only between that two-man group and Vingegaard. And behind Vingegaard, there's still 30 seconds at that point.
Yeah, 35.
If Van Aert waits there, drops to the Vingegaard, he's got 14 kilometers to close 10 seconds on Mollema and Elizonde with Vingegaard and his wheel. And then he can outsprint them in the end for ultimate God status. Like, it's very risky. And I know that a team leader will not say to Van Aert there, yeah, you got to wait on next group, because that's gonna have mental like effects on the rider that is called back and so forth in that stage. But if it was Soler, I would have done it just for jokes.
if you make Wout van Aert sit up and he doesn't win the stage because something weird happens, Belgium will go crazy. And if I was Wout van Aert, you'd probably leave. You'd probably you'd be so mad. The solution, Benji, is clear. Jonas Vingegaard needs to get the kit supplier, Lacolle, who support this podcast, have been the show partner for nearly a year, or almost over a year now. If he gets the McLaren Project Aero collaboration with Lacolle, Benji, Jonas, okay, he's probably going to go past Elizonde. It's performance-tested cycling
apparel. He's going to win the stage.
So listen, Jonas, I know, you know, maybe just talk to Lacolle about getting it in your colors, but you can, if you still want, Jonas, I mean, you didn't get any bonus money today, you can use the LRTDF20 discount code, because you're getting on the podium is going to be a battle with no one on Jumbo Visma helping you to get 20% off Lacolle kit. Also, our listeners can get that 20% off with LRTDF20 to pick up some Lacolle kit during the Tour de France. Benji, I felt so sorry for Jonas. I just touched on it there. He is getting, maybe not through anyone's fault, and I agree, dropping my phone up back is some sort of PCM. That's like PCM level stuff that you might do, but Jonas is getting no help at all. No one paced on the climb when he felt good for him. Kuss is, well, I don't know what's wrong with him, but what, is today not supposed to suit him? Like a high mountain stage with two ascents of Ventoux, isn't this supposed to be what he's good at? He's got no one pacing him. He's on this descent where he's 58 kilos and he's now having it closed by Carapaz, Urán, and Pogačar, who are now behind him chasing. And you just see the seconds ticking down, 2 seconds off his time to them, 4 seconds, 5 seconds. Eventually, he's only 18 seconds ahead and we've got like 7Ks left. I'm like, he's going to be caught. Is that a what could Jumbo-Visma have really done differently, or is this just an inevitable problem of stage design, Benji, where the best climber on the day is going to be disadvantaged a lot solo compared to a group chasing behind?
Well, it kind of depends. If you're a very good descender here, you're going to stay ahead. Like, you're not going to lose time. Van Aert didn't lose time towards...
Yeah, but he's heavy. He's 75 kilos.
That's true, but good point. Like, I think that Jumbo can't really do things here in that situation because you can't have people ahead at that point to back unless it's the first rider in the race, and that would be Van Aert in this situation. So in this situation, they probably can't help. They can help more in the stages, though. I don't think we'll see Van Aert likely doing this again on a mountain stage, but I might suggest that he might win tomorrow in a sprint just for shits and giggles. But I think that they should have support for him. They had Cousin Tönnesen sitting around him in the peloton, protecting him in the peloton, getting bottles towards him. That's the basic support. Like, I don't know if they're capable of doing more at the moment with the riders they have. They fall in every single stage, which is not like, I'm not throwing shade at them. I'm just saying, like, they've had very bad luck and some bike handling issues throughout the entire Tour de France so far. And as a consequence, they're not as good as expected. Sepp Kuss, he stayed at the training camp longer before the Tour, I think a week, but I'm not sure about it. I read this somewhere. And I would guess that the point there is you're trying to make sure he is peaking later in the Tour. But the problem is that we're now getting to the point that is later in the Tour. So this exactly. should be where he's getting better. And at the moment, I don't see it yet. So I hope that it still kicks in the last week. But so far, it's not looking great for Gus. But Vingegaard might need him, definitely, on the Luz Ardiden and all that kind
definitely
of stages.
Definitely needs him. Yeah, Jonas was the best climber out of the GC group today. And say that's not say that trend doesn't continue in respect of Pogačar. Yep. Exclude Pogačar. I think Jonas, you could say, he's looking better than Carapaz right now. Looking better than – I'd say he's better climber than Urán normally, and definitely better than Lutsenko and Kelderman. You're going to need a guy to pace to put those guys under pressure. And Kuss last year would have been able to put those guys probably off the back of the group. And then, yeah, Jonas can almost keep pacing. So he's definitely going to need him later in the Tour. And maybe Wout van Aert as well, Benji. He's got to – yeah, we'll get to the stage results. Wout van Aert predictably didn't get called back because Jumbo-Visma aren't lunatics like me. And so they let him go solo for the stage win. On Mont Ventoux, the man who won a sprint stage at the start of Tirreno wins on the double Mont Ventoux day, albeit it is a descent finish, 1 minute and 14 ahead of Elizondo and Mollema, second and third, both on Trek. Then Pogačar, Urán, and Carapaz catch Jonas Vingegaard. They finish in a group of four, a minute 38 back, and they put 18 seconds into Lutsenko and Kelderman. Mast, the big GC loser today, he lost a minute and 26 seconds, 24 seconds on the Pogačar, Urán, Carapaz, Vingegaard group. So he's badly behind Benji now because his TT, he'll lose even more. He's nearly two minutes behind Rigoberto Urán, the revised GC. Pogačar still with a pretty comfortable 5 minute and 18 second lead on Rigoberto Urán. Vingegaard 5:32, Carapaz 5:33. O'Connor drops to fifth, 5:58. Probably going to see that continue. Kelderman 6:16, Lutsenko 6:30, Mas 7:11. But yeah, how did you feel as a Belgian, Benji, especially with that bet on? You got the flag in the background today with Wout van Aert winning the Ventoux stage after such a tough Tour de France for Jumbo-Visma so far.
Well, I think the most notable thing that I see from it is that you've got the Ventoux, which is a climb with a gradient similar towards Tokyo, Mikuni Pass, the last climb in that race. And this shows that he can definitely take on that climb because it's a much shorter climb as well than the Ventoux. So I think this is very promising towards the Olympics and the road race there. And that's pretty cool. And next to that, like, yeah, obviously, I'm happy that Wout van Aert won a race. But I also want to throw it on a different side here. You think that Pogačar is going to be happy that, unlike Roglic last year, he decided to take the time early and take 3 minutes early to prevent days like today having an influence?
Exactly. And, you know, he made a mistake maybe today that he but it doesn't even matter because when you feel good. And he said, and he's right, like when you read the article from his coach, San Milan, and you look at the times they did on Teen Stage 9 and the level that Pogacar's capable of, as well as Rogic, and also what you would expect from Carapaz, the times that they were doing in the Waspakil on Teen was not outrageous. So the investment from him to just take another 30 seconds without, he looked pretty comfortable. If you can do it, why not? Why not that? And yeah, he did. And now he's got a 5 minute 18 buffer. Now the TT, how do you predict that really? Getting so much in the TT and on stage eight. But yeah, it's just, it is a lesson. Well, the counter argument, Benji, is, oh, well, he invested so much that he was losing time, or he's in trouble today. But when you lose time from the front and you have that buffer, there's always going to be someone that will pull you. And that's what we saw today. He basically has Carapaz and Uran closing a huge, you know, the gap for him, and he ends up losing nothing. So, yeah, I'd always rather have time gained than having to make up the time.
Exactly.
Mas, Benji, Movistar, surely at this point you've got to say, Enric, love you, but you're on your own. The other guys have got to get some freedom to get something out of this race, because the team's classification as well is not looking good for them.
Yeah, their main goal is not looking good. You're right. And I think Lopez should go in breakaways in mountain stages. He can gain stuff there. But I also think that you shouldn't give up on Mas. He still needs support to try and get that top five.
Just not the whole team.
Lutsenko can definitely still have a moment where he drops. Mas is usually growing towards the end of a Grand Tour, so that should help him.
Yep.
I think that in O'Connor, if he continues climbing like today, he's likely going to drop out of top five as well.
Yep.
And that is a ride you can pass as well. Then you're close towards top five, and you only need one rider to collapse then to try and get into top five and prevent collapsing yourself, which is also a big if, looking at how Mas went today. But all in all, I think that you shouldn't give up on him completely, but just like a Martin, for example, or a Bilbao, those riders have opportunities for their companions to go in breakaways.
Exactly.
And they're still in 9th and 10th. Yeah, you're right. Even,
and Jumbo
can't
Visma.
Say it about Astana.
Jumbo Visma, they let a guy that, you know, if Wout pulled today, maybe Jonas does gain time, but they were like, you can't invest everything on maybe a podium, maybe a top five.
Exactly.
You need to also have other goals at the Tour de France, because you could be left
with
nothing.
Yeah, but not too much. You got to try and balance it perfectly between the two. So, for example, if Van Aert and Kuss and Turnus were in the break today, that's too much of the good. You have to have like a good balance between the two, a good support for Vingegaard and a good opportunity in stages. And that's working out here, I think. So that's pretty cool. I think that one thing we do need to mention is that Cavendish came on in time, came home.
Yep. Good.
And about that, he actually did something pretty cool on the climb when they passed the unfortunate spot where Tom Simpson passed away on the Mont Ventoux. He took off his helmet mid-race and saluted the place where it happened. Let's hope the UCI don't DQ him for it. But
I don't think so.
That would be so harsh.
Yeah, he finished in time. He's looking good. Buani finished inside the time limit. Soren Kjær Andersen finished inside the time limit solely because Wout van Aert posted up and lost a bit of time at the end. If he hadn't, maybe Soren Kjær would have finished outside it. But it looks like Luke Rowe is outside the time limit. So the big losers of the day are obviously Ineos.
They paced all day. And they've got their own rider.
They paced on the flat. We don't know why. I mean, the break was at 5 minutes and they weren't eating into it. They paced hard on the flat, didn't make any impression on the break, didn't attack with Carapaz, and Luke Rowe's outside the time limit. And we've got some rolling sprint stages tomorrow where he's, you can't underestimate how good and useful Luke Rowe is. And I think it's a shame. But yeah, he's outside the time limit. So probably out of the race. Should be out of the race.
Yeah, but then again, I think their pacing would not have influenced Rowe, right? Because
no, but he was the one pacing. He was the one pulling,
yeah, true.
So he was tired.
Yeah.
That's the point. Yep. They didn't make the race finish quicker, but they made him pull instead of sitting in. Because like normally Luke Rowe shouldn't have a problem if Cavendish can finish. Tomorrow's stage, 159K, stage 12. Benji and I like the breaks always in these sprint stages from Saint Paul, Trois Chateaux de Nîmes. It's a little bit rolly. This intermediate sprint is at the top of a short, punchy climb. I think you'll see Cavendish might be able to do it. But the final climb of the day, 3.9Ks, 3%, and there's a rolling ridgeline afterwards. Surely the other teams are not going to help Quick Step, Benji, and we should see FDJ, who have Godu now out, and other teams really investing for the breakaway, because if people just let them go to the line and sprint with Cavendish, apart from Arkea and Wout van Aert, who realistically have a chance of winning, and Philipsen, all the other teams should be trying to get in the break, right, or putting pressure on Quickstep on that climb.
Yeah, I think so as well, but I think that that's going to be hard on this stage. Do you think that it's enough to put pressure on it?
I don't think you can really drop Cavendish, but yeah. I think all these rolling hills just make it more difficult to control. Yeah. I think Van Moor is a great option tomorrow again. Keep mentioning him. And I'd really like to see a lot of riders. They'll be tired, though. That's the problem. Everyone's super tired. Yeah. But stage 13 is like a little, again, a bit rolly. So, I'd like to see more of a fight than in stage 10 to put pressure on Quickstep. I still think, if you're Alpecin, get a guy in the break so that they have to use Asgreen pulling back the break with De Klerk, so they can't set up with 1,500 to go with four guys, and then you're absolutely toast. That's just my view on it. But yeah, who do you like for tomorrow, Benji? Cav equaling the record?
I was going to say Wout van Aert for the sprint. But I kind of hope Van Moor wins. Just personal hope. I haven't looked at the weather, whether it's headwind or anything, so I can't tell you if the headwind will prevent the large breakaway of getting away or a difficult breakaway of getting away. I think that they're definitely going to try for Cavendish. If their lead out is perfect again, then it's going to be hard to beat him. But I think that it would be pretty chaotic and crazy if you win a sprint stage after winning a mountain stage with the Mont Ventoux. So I'm for Van Aert tomorrow.
Yeah, I think Van Aert, I still think Van Aert can definitely win. I think if Cavendish doesn't get dropped off with 140 metres to go, if it's not a perfect drop-off, then Wout van Aert does have the speed. How today impacts his legs, I don't know, he's superhuman. I'm trying to see how technical the run-in is, Benji. You're more the master at this. But yeah, where the Quickstep lead out, how important it will be. It looks pretty... Oh, now there is a turn. There's a turn, it's a right-hand bend, and then a roundabout right near the end. But the roundabout, they should be able to go straight through pretty fast. So, yeah, we'll see. Wout van Aert I like as well. Maybe Jasper Philipsen to break to duck. Okay, that's the recap of Stage 11, the big Mont Ventoux today. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Like it down below if you did. If you're listening on YouTube, we'll give us a review or a rating on podcast players. We'll see you at the recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.